There I was, giving a ride to a nice person I had just met, carpooling to a dance class in Asheville for a Friday night. She was new in town, just settling in, and excited to be meeting new people. So she invited me to the little church she'd just joined. I thanked her, and I told her a little bit about my own church, saying she'd be welcome to visit us here at the UU. With that, my new friend turned, shook her head, and said very firmly, "Oh, no." It was an interesting feeling, even more so than when friends tell me, "Oh, Unitarian Universalists, they can believe anything they want to, right?" Or, "I know about UUs, they're all in their heads." Somehow that, "Oh, no," seemed to go beyond simple misunderstanding. It felt a little like the Edwin Markham poem in the Bulletin. "She drew a circle that shut me out, heretic, rebel, a thing to flout." But then the poem goes on. "But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and took her in." Love, can love do that? Can it draw a wider circle to include those with a different approach to faith? Maybe a different set of principles? Love, possibly in the form of respect? I believe that our first and fourth principles speak to exactly that kind of love, to the practice of respect for all our neighbors, including those of different faiths. The first of our UU principles asks us to recognize our neighbor's inherent worth and dignity. And the fourth asks us to respect each other's free and responsible search for truth and meaning, our own, and I believe our neighbor's as well. When I first came here asking what UUs were all about, someone explained it to me this way. You can be a Christian UU, or a humanist UU, a Jewish or atheist, Muslim or pagan or Buddhist UU. You can even take something from each of these. It's up to you to find your own spiritual path. So I kept coming. I heard wisdom and insight from these and from other traditions, from the voices of science and reason, and from those who are moved by transcendental experiences with nature or in the arts. This rich offering was woven into reflections from the pulpit, but also small group gatherings and even conversations. So this has become my spiritual home. I come here on Sunday mornings to be lifted out of my everyday world with music and messages that speak to my soul. And I come here for you, to learn from you and with you, to make big decisions and everyday choices in life-affirming ways. It's good to be part of this community. But sometimes there are things said here that just don't fit with that bigger picture of open minds and loving hearts. Things that leave me a little disappointed, even distressed. There are, for instance, the uncomplimentary comments one hears now and then in reference to a church down the road. There's a chuckle that so many of us shared when a speaker humorously described volunteers on a mission trip, wasting time when there was so much work to be done because they had paused for prayer. And there is the casual labeling of beliefs that differ from one's own with words like nonsense or absurd or even fantasy. And I can't overlook the day I heard myself suggesting that the unkind behavior of someone I knew was due to their beliefs and the church they attend. I made some seriously unfair assumptions that day about things I don't know. Of course, incidents like these are few and far between, maybe just the exceptions that prove the rule. But for me that day, it was so easy to slip from seeing difference into speculating about and then judging, putting down another person's faith. I wasn't even aware of what I'd said until later. Working hard as we do to search out an authentic faith that resonates in our hearts and minds, it can be difficult to make room for the different conclusions our neighbors may have come to. Ways of thinking which simply may not make much sense to us. And it can sometimes be difficult to express our own convictions in ways that are gentle and that do not alienate others in the community or even undermine the love that we want to share with this community. Of course, we are very accepting of difference within our own congregation, aren't we? Well, mostly. When the sermon writing group first began, I was intrigued and I asked one of the members, "What will you do your sermon about?" The reply, "Well, I'm not sure, but I don't think it will have anything to do with my theist beliefs." I had to wonder, could this insightful, longtime UU member not feel safe sharing a deeply held, meaningful part of their faith? Would it have seemed risky? Maybe not have been well received? Maybe not have seemed UU enough? I had to wonder about that. But then you ask, what about those whose beliefs seem clearly misguided? Those who might question the value of science or close their eyes to injustice, how do I respect that person? It's very clear to me that not everything going on in the name of religion is free or responsible or loving. But looking back on the path that brought me here, my own very human search, I have decided that I have to reserve judgment whenever possible. There is so much about the faith of another person that I may not understand. And when it does become necessary to speak up, when an expression of religious belief threatens to harm, I do think that it's still important to choose our words with great care and to remember the power of continuing to listen. Walls built in the name of what's right are everywhere in our world, but hearts and opinions which harden in the face of opposition voiced unkindly may soften when one feels that they've been heard. So I'm using a sort of mantra now to help me respond to persons with beliefs I find challenging. Respect and wonder. The word respect at its root means look again. Re means again. Spect means look. Can I pause and when things upset me or don't make sense and look again, maybe with a more open mind and open heart? And might I then find something of value that I missed the first time, or the second, or even the third? Don't we all yearn to be treated with respect? The second word in my mantra, wonder, is used by Quaker author and educator Parker Palmer to get us thinking. Palmer works with people in small groups, helping them to listen in generous and skillful ways which create trust, the kind of trust which then allows each one to discover their own deep wisdom. When things inevitably come up that surprise or even dismay those who are asked to listen, Palmer says, turn to wonder. Wonder how this person came to believe this and why it seems to work for her. Wonder what those words he's saying really mean to him. And wonder what my reaction can teach me about myself. Turning to wonder, I now realize that much of what I rely on to face life's big questions is not mine due to some achievement on my part, but it is in many ways a gift. And if I'm wise enough to consider that the faith I now embrace just might not mean that I have nothing more to learn, then I think I have to give the benefit of the doubt to my neighbors as well, those whose experiences may have brought them to different practices and maybe a very different worldview. Might I be worshiping at her church today if I'd grown up in her family or walked every day in her shoes? Might I be searching for truth using a different vocabulary or listening to different sources for the news and for help deciding who to trust? And then there's our complex natures, as Annie Dillard calls them, our minds made for language and logic, and also for the wider knowledge that informs our intuition, our bodies that speak to us with heartfelt wisdom and gut feelings. As Joseph Campbell tells us, a person's sacred scripture, their myths, their religious rituals are full of metaphors, symbols, and stories which can speak a truth beyond logical ways of knowing. Medical educator Rachel Ribbon tells of one Native American storyteller who addresses this right up front. He begins his story by saying, "I don't know if it happened just this way, but this story is true." So are we and our neighbors listening for truth and responding in matters of faith, not just through our different experiences, but also with different parts of our brains and bodies and complex natures? And what about the different reasons we come to faith? Mystery that calls to us, the need to belong and for hope in hard times. We search for ways of understanding and for ways of simply standing when life tries to knock us down. No wonder some praise God singing and dancing while others sit for an hour of silence. Some recite prayers bowing 5 times a day while others practice their faith working for social justice. Some look for ways to tell the world about their good news while others ponder and question and light a chalice. No wonder some of us explore mystics and others explore physics. Some rely on what we are taught by family and community, while others resist, rebel, rethink. My dear brother's family is grounded in their Catholic faith. My wonderful mother-in-law believes in the Southern Baptist way. And a very close friend gets through life relying on Buddhist teachings. I have humanist friends who inspire me with their generous service to the community and a trusted confidant who bases her life on Baha'i understandings. I want to believe that on Sunday morning, any of them would feel welcome visiting this UU service. They might be surprised to hear the words of Thoreau or Rumi or Lao Tzu along with Isaiah and Corinthians. And they might hear us laugh at ourselves because we're good at that. But there would be no comments, no humor that would leave them feeling uncomfortable. I have another very wise friend with whom I'm visiting Friday services at the synagogue. She's exploring, after many years as a UU, what that tradition she grew up in might mean to her now. I support her in this, and I want to be supported in my own search as I draw on many sources, including the Christian faith I grew up in, still very much alive for me today. As Unitarian Universalists, you and I can disagree. We can share our convictions, consider, challenge different perspectives, but we do so with love and with respect. We do so mindful that, along with our Sunday morning smiles, we bring here our hopes, our vulnerabilities, and our longings to be accepted in what we hold most deeply and most tenderly. Respect is more than a principle applied generally to all people. It's a way of thinking, and yes, a way of talking about particular people. Those particular people in my family, or waiting in line with me for groceries, to vote, to get help at the emergency room. Respect is a way about thinking about those persons walking into the church next door, the megachurch in town, the tiny one on the country road, and this UU. As people of faith, you use draw upon many sources and many traditions. I hope you'll take home and read over that insert in the bulletin that lists our UU sources. We share our world with people of different cultures, different life experiences, and natures as complex as our own. All of us in need of truth and meaning to guide our lives. In the words of Reverend Rob Hardies of All Souls Church in D.C., we need souls that can take in the world in all its complexity and diversity. We need souls that can love and be in relationship with all of this complexity. We need a spiritual posture of embrace. With a spiritual posture of embrace, I believe we can draw a wider circle. We can find it in our hearts to appreciate our neighbors of different faiths and maybe be more open to other kinds of difference too. Along with my search for truth and meaning, I hope I am learning better how to practice the kind of love that respects, that looks again, and continues to listen to those I may not understand or agree with. I know I have a long ways to go with this, but I'm so tired of all these hurtful divisions in our world. And I don't want any of us to miss out on the important gifts that we have to share with one another. I believe that our surviving and our thriving as human beings in this world depends on the kind of love that seeks to respect a neighbor.